This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Davina from Devon. I've been sober curious for quite a few years. Never really made it stick because, well, everybody drinks alcohol, right? Anyway, I decided to join OTI after listening to the pod and just the enthusiasm from Ben and Shaz shouting about AF life. I'm so glad I joined the community because I'm now nearly 200 days alcohol free. It's an absolute game changer for me. Everybody on the Zooms are lovely. It's just like one great big extended family and we're all just cheering everybody on. I would recommend without hesitation that you join because it's just the best thing I've ever done.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it's flipping fantastic to have you listening. Now, normally, at this point, when I do the introductions, I'll give you a little bit about myself and I'll say, I don't do this on my own. Here's Ben. Tonight, I am doing this on my own. This episode, I am flying solo because, as we speak, my co-host, Ben Anderson, is stuck in traffic somewhere on the M62. Anyway, the show must go on. So, if you are joining us for the very first time, let me introduce who I am. My name is Sharon Hartley. I have just turned 50 years old. How did that happen? Celebrating 5 years plus now of sobriety and hurtling towards my sixth alcohol-free Christmas. None of this was supposed to happen. This podcast, this community, me being alcohol-free, teetotal, sober, call it what you will. All I ever wanted to do was take a break from the booze, I suppose, to prove to myself and anybody else that was looking in that I didn't have a problem, it's fine, I can do this. And I took a break from alcohol back in the back end of summer 2018. It was only ever going to be a 90-day break because day 91, when I was going to get right back on it, was the 1st of December and I was fully intent on throwing myself into December, drinking non-stop and then feeling shit at the start of the new year and everything else that comes with it. Something really bonkers happened. I stopped drinking and I started living and I genuinely, hand on heart, fell head over heels in love with sobriety and an alcohol-free life. Hence why this podcast exists and we wang on about the joys of sobriety week in, week out. I would like to say at this point, I don't do this on my own. Here's my co-host, Ben Anderson. But as I mentioned, he is stuck on the motorway. And we said, you know what? We will crack on because the diary is dead flipping busy. And we've been trying to get today's guest on the podcast for ages. We've finally done it. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Dupe Witherick from Oxfordshire to Over the Influence. How the heck are you? Lovely to have you here.
Oh, bless you. Lovely to see you, Sharon. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I've been, you know, it's an honour to be on. So thank you.
You're more than welcome. And that's really, really kind of you. And I know we were chatting before we started recording, Dupe. And I was reading a bit about you and your alcohol-free journey and what brought you to this point and then the things you started doing in sobriety. And I'm like, oh, my God, this woman, we are so similar. We are so very similar. 3 years in November, wasn't it, for you, alcohol-free?
Yeah, so I'm hurtling to my fourth alcohol-free Christmas, and similar to you, that was just never going to happen when I first I took a break for 21 days. Who would have thought it, 3 years in? And yeah, it's amazing. And I'm very much like you, very, you know, very much about this is a choice and you don't have to wait until you hit rock bottom, and you can make a decision to do this, even though everything around you and everyone around you says this is not the thing to do. And, you know, it's so ingrained in our society. And we're, as you know, everyone's having their Christmas parties at the moment, and people are sort of thinking this is the way to do it. And people don't actually just take that step back and say, actually, is this what I want to be doing? I think more so maybe with the younger generation now, but definitely not with our generation.
Yeah, 100%. I want to go back as well to when you were a drinker and what life looked like for you then. And I love what you're saying. This is something, Dupe, that Ben bangs on about time after time after time. You do not need a rock bottom. You can make a choice at any point to change your relationship with alcohol. But this will be going out over the Christmas period. And you know, we've got a lot of members of our community at the moment. There's a lot of people listening to this podcast that struggle over Christmas, and it's flipping hard, and there's like extra pressure wherever you turn to drink. Just have one. You need it to have fun. You're coming up to your fourth alcohol-free Christmas. Just take us back to maybe your first and what that was like, because it's flipping tricky, isn't it?
It's really interesting because, as I said, if you had asked me, let's say, even 3 months ago, would I have had an alcohol-free Christmas? It just wasn't on the cards at all. And so I was actually quite nervous. I was really nervous about it. I didn't think it was something that was possible because we all have our traditions. And so my Christmases, I've only had one alcohol-free Christmas, and that was when I was pregnant with my daughter. And, you know, that was actually quite hard as well. And so, you know, it was as soon as, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you go 9 months without drinking, then the first thing you want to do is have a glass of champagne, celebrate. Yeah, and so, you know, it, you just then get back on it. And then there's a whole mummy wine culture, etc. And so my daughter was 3 when I stopped drinking. And so she's, what am I saying? She was 6. She's now going to be 10 in March. And so I took the 21-day break, and a few things happened during those 21 days, which then made me think, why don't I try this for a bit longer? But I was so conscious of the fact that it was coming up to Christmas and New Year. And our traditions were you have a salmon breakfast with champagne. And then
you do.
And look at me, how posh. And then,
and then you can tell you're from the south, Dupe. You can get that up north.
And then you go on and you have your, you know, your roast dinner, and you have to have your wine, your red wine. And then you sort of have a port and some cheese at the end, and then you have your pudding, and so you just, you know, the Bailey's coffees, and the whole day is sort of, it revolves around booze, doesn't it? That's just the reality of it. It's the one day where you could actually say, I'm allowed to do this and go all out. And so I was nervous that when you've got all these rituals, how do you really change? But I discovered the whole alcohol-free drinks, and 3 years ago there weren't that many, but there were a couple, and Liars was around. And so I sort of thought, I'm going to experiment. And I bought a load of different Liars products. I probably shouldn't be mentioning the name, but cocktails. And
no, you're good. I mean, we quite often share the stuff that we like.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, I'm going to create like different cocktails and make it a bit of a different day. And so I got the mix for an espresso, no espresso martini. And I got the mix for an orange spritz type, Italian spritz type thing, and just had fun. And then I'd found a great alcohol-free fizz and an alcohol-free gin. And so I literally just kept the rituals and changed the ingredients, as Janie says. And so then that is what I did. And actually the mulled wine, I have fab alcohol-free mulled wine recipe as well. So when we were decorating the tree and when we were wrapping presents, you know, I could drink that. And I, so I didn't feel like I was missing out in that sense. And I felt great. And it was the first Christmas that I woke up and I was like, this is amazing. And what fun. And you're just sort of like full of it. And you're wanting to stand, you know, you're so pleased Santa's arrived. And you're like, yay, this is just, you know, this is fabulous.
And Santa's still not asleep on the settee, having had too much Baileys.
Exactly.
That's amazing. That's so good. Thank you for sharing that. That's it's really, really helpful. But I think you're right there. What I picked up on, I felt the same for my first Christmas without booze. I was terrified. And I know that sounds absolutely bonkers. And I thought, what do you do? How do you navigate that month and the parties and everything else? And like you say, the rituals surrounding, you know, family outings and Christmas Day and all the rest of it. But I'll tell you something. I don't know about you. For me, that first alcohol-free Christmas, Dupe, was It was one of the best for so many reasons.
Yeah. And I felt so proud of myself as well. You know, Boxing Day came and I was like, I've just bloody gone and done that. I've got through an alcohol free, and it didn't feel like I was getting through it. I just thoroughly, I was buzzing. I was just, you know, it was just such fun. And you really appreciate, you know, as I said, with having a little girl, she was so excited. And I don't think I'd really appreciated that sort of that genuine excitement that she had and felt it myself. And so that was just, yeah, lovely. Really, really
amazing.
Good.
I love it. And I'm really interested in the fact as well that you were going to take a break for 21 days. So in my intro, I mentioned that I was going to take a break for 90, so a little bit longer, and then get fully back on it, you know, when those 90 days were up, because it was obviously going to be absolutely awful. It wasn't, turns out. What happened in those 21 days then that made you think, you know what, I'm just going to keep cracking on with this?
Yeah, so it was amazing. So before, I think coming up to that time when I said I'd take a break for 21 days, I had got to the point I wasn't enjoying it as much anymore. I had got to the point where red wine, I used to drink lots of heavy red wines. I lived in Spain for a year, so I was very used to sort of those heavy Riojas, Malbecs, and that was my sort of drink. I wasn't really a white wine sort of drinker. And gin and tonics I loved. They were probably the two things I really, really drank. But probably about a year or a year and a half before, I'd gone off the heavy red wines, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I tell you what, why don't I try the light red wines? And so then I went on to your Pinot Noirs. They're a bit lighter, they're a bit better for you. They're not going to give me that headache after one glass, which is what I was finding. You know, I just wasn't really able to, just didn't like it. And then I wasn't enjoying that. And so I thought, okay, well, let me try white wines. I know I'll go on to the Picpeau de Pinay, and I'll do this and I'll do that. And, you know, you just sort of think, what the hell am I doing? And it had got to the point where I just wasn't, at the end, I knew I was drinking because I felt I had to, as opposed to because I wanted to. And it was just because of the social settings and what the expectation was. And so it probably got to the point where I was drinking gin and tonics and champagne. They were probably the two things I could drink and genuinely have and sort of enjoy. But the day before I stopped, so that Sunday, I thought, I tell you what, I'm going to have a glass of champagne as a last hurrah because I'm not drinking for 21 days. And I had a sip and it was just really weird. I had this, you know, maybe a big sip, but my stomach then started to churn and I just felt really, it was like I was feeling repelled by it in a way. And I thought, well, that's a sign. That's, you know, and I'd had this sort of niggle and nudge that maybe I should stop drinking because something better was going to come or something's going to happen, or it might just set me free in some way. And I don't know what that meant, but I just kept having this nudge, this niggle. And so I stopped. And then on the Monday, and probably for the first couple of weeks, I was drinking water, tea, coffee. And I thought, this is just a bit dull. You know, and I was like, I'm going to get through the 21 days. I'm fairly determined. If I set my mind to something, I'm going to do it. And I thought, I'll get through the 21 days. But I wasn't really enjoying it. But then I stumbled across a podcast. It might have been a TED Talk and then a podcast. And I started hearing about people that had stopped drinking and actually quite enjoyed their life. And for me, prior to that, my perspective and my viewpoint was anyone who didn't drink was boring. It was because they had to stop drinking. There was a problem. And I was a bit suspicious of people that didn't drink. I was a little bit like, well, why are you drinking? And I'd be the one going, go on, have a drink. And you know, that was me. And I, during that time, I then stumbled across an article about an alcohol-free fizz. And I read it and I thought, I'm sure I've seen this before. And I was like, why do I feel like I know this? And then I suddenly remembered I had a bottle in my cupboard. And you're probably thinking, hold on a minute, back up, what? Why? And I in that summer, someone had come to our house for lunch and brought me a bottle of this fizz. And I remember thinking, what the hell? Why have you brought me this? especially as they proceeded to drink my wine. And I was just like, what am I meant to do with this then? And I stuffed it in the cupboard. Little did I know that 2 months later I'd find it. So I went to my cupboard, right at the back, pulled it out. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is like, it's been waiting for me, you know. And I had a girls' night. And it was, and the other thing that probably helped, which I haven't mentioned, was we were obviously still in that sort of COVID period. So we're in and out of lockdowns and all of that sort of stuff. And we had a girls' night on Zoom. And everyone was drinking proper, like, Prosecco, champagne, whatever. And so I knew I had to have something, because otherwise, and I hadn't told anyone I wasn't drinking. And so I poured myself this glass thinking it's going to be vile, even though they'd said in this article it was going to be amazing. I was like, fake news. But let's have a go.
Fake news, obviously.
And so we all did the cheers, and I thought, okay, I'm going to have a glass, had a sip, and I fully expected it to be awful, but it wasn't. It was really nice. And I thought, hold on a minute, if I can drink something that I quite like anyway, that is actually alcohol-free, and I'm going to wake up the next day feeling wonderful, well, why don't I try that? And so that was a pleasant surprise. And I didn't know anything about alcohol-free drinks, really. The only thing I knew about, I think, was Sipsmith at the time. Sipsmith? No, not Sipsmith. What am I thinking of? Can't think of what it is. But anyway, there was an alcohol-free gin that was, I thought, not very nice. And so I'd sort of, that was all.
Seedlip,
that's it. Thank Seedlip. You very much.
Yeah, I've had a few of those. It's the garden one that's not for me. The citrus one, all right. The garden one, it smelt of peas. Bizarre.
Yeah, not good. So that was the only knowledge I had. And I don't think I'd ever tasted it. I just had a vision, a view that it wasn't nice. And people had said it wasn't nice. So anyway, alcohol for it. So I had that. And it looked to everybody else that I was just joining in, and I think I was just as fun as normal. And that was the other thing, I thought it made me boring, so I wasn't going to be fun. And so that happened. And then I joined a community towards the end, literally a day or two before, and said I'll join a Zoom call, and chatted to these women who were probably 3 months in, 6 months in, just raving about all the things that had changed and this pink cloud and all this amazing stuff. And I was like, yeah, but what are you going to do for Christmas? You can't do Christmas without it. And they convinced me to just keep going and try. And that's what I did. And so 21 days became 30 days. I got through Christmas and New Year. And then that became sort of 3 months, 6 months, and other things happened along the way, which just showed me that this is what I was meant to be doing. And I love it. I can't explain what a difference it's made. My life was absolutely fine before. There was nothing, you know, I had a good life. There was nothing wrong. I went on nice holidays. I'd climbed Kilimanjaro. I did all the things. It wasn't like I wasn't living, but I wasn't living in the sense that this has just opened me up to so much more. And I've learned so much. I've become a runner. I did the London Marathon in April. I haven't run for 25 years, and I only started running after I, you know, stopped drinking. I do yoga every day. I sort of practice gratitude and just notice like things around me a lot more. And I love walking in nature, and just they're all little things, and seemingly little, and probably don't seem that exciting. But my whole perspective has shifted, and I absolutely believe by being alcohol free, it's the best kept secret, and it's an absolute superpower. It makes you brave. You can go out and do anything you want to do. You're no longer feeling like you're held back in some way, and it's just fabulous. So that's my view, but you know, I urge people always to just try and experiment, explore it, and see if life can be better in some way, be that physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, just decide to take a break and see what happens. What have you got to lose?
As you know, we do our OTI outdoor adventures, and this year, oh, crikey, we've done Ben Nevis, we've done Scarfell. I know you're into the outdoors as well, and I want to talk about the picture behind you, which I think is that Kilimanjaro you've got on the wall.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, stunning. And one of the last hikes we were on, one of our members, I think she was approaching 100 days, you know, doing amazing, doing really, really well. And she was having a bit of a dip, and that, you know, that happens. It's not all sunshine and glittery rainbows all the time. You know, that there is a lot of up and down. And she said, will it get better? And I said, do you think that I would have spent the last 5 years of my life banging on this flipping podcast, you know, running this alcohol-free community, shouting from the rooftops to anybody that would listen, if it wasn't life-changing? And I think for so many people, Dupe, I think in particular in those early first few weeks, you know, first couple of months, when it, you know, it's not all pink clouds. And
No. Yes,
life does get better, but also with removing alcohol, for so many people can uncover a variety of reasons why they might drink, you know, so you've got a lot of stuff to navigate. But it's so hard to believe, isn't it, that things aren't going to get better. I've yet to meet one person, and I mean one person, that have said, well, that was crap.
Agreed. And I think, to your point, over the past 3 years, there have been ups and downs, absolutely, for me. And last year especially, I wasn't very well for quite a few months, and that was challenging. But what I'd say is that by being alcohol-free, you can navigate it a lot better. Whatever happens, you are able to get through it in a less emotional sort of way. So your emotions when you're drinking, I would say you have the highest of highs and you have the lowest of lows. It's sort of like that constantly. Whereas when you're not drinking, even though the lows happen, it's sort of a bit more of a steady ship, as it were, and you're able to manage. And this obviously comes, you know, as I'm, you know, over 3 years alcohol free, and it's been a lot of work and all the rest of it. But you learn to manage your emotions a lot better, and you're able to process things and not overreact to things as you would maybe if you've had a drink. A lot of arguments and things happen when you've been drinking, you know. And so by removing all of that, it does give you that ability to cope better with the ups and downs that life throws at you. And even when you have the downs, you still feel better than you do if you compare it to when you felt really crap, having had a night out where you've drunk way too much and you regret every minute of it. So, yeah,
completely. I mean, you're a parent. I'm a mother of three. I think my kids are considerably older than yours. I've got the eldest, he's 23. Our daughter's 20, and the youngest is 15. And you know, up until the age of 44 for me, just before my 45th birthday, you know, I drank, and for the last sort of 15 years prior to that is when it ramped up for me. And I look back and I think, my God, you were such a shouty mum. You were so shouty all the time. Everything was a drama. And I'm not talking about when I had a bottle of wine at night. I'm talking about the day after, when you think you're all right, but you're still functioning so below par. And then when I removed the booze, I was like, oh, I didn't know I could feel like this. This is a thing called calmness and clarity. Did you experience that as a parent as well?
Yeah, I'm definitely a lot more calm and a lot more confident, I think, in my parenting abilities as well. So I think I was very much on high alert a lot as well, probably a little bit anxious, a little bit frustrated very quickly, you know, and just sort of you're shorter with them. That's probably what it is. And I find I'm so much more patient now, and I you know, children are children, and they can literally just talk at you. And I remember that my daughter talks a lot. She loves chatting, and she'll chat to everybody, but there were some mornings I was just like, please stop talking. <You know? laughs> But now I'm absolutely, I just love it. I don't, you know, there isn't that impatience. There isn't that, oh, let me just put you to bed so I can have a glass of wine or whatever, and I can have my time or whatever, you know, there isn't that racing through reading a book or anything because you've been waiting all day to have that reward or whatever it was. So I absolutely think I'm really pleased, because I don't really know how much my daughter remembers, because she was, as I said, she was six at the time. And I'm hoping that she doesn't really remember me being sort of that irritable mummy. And now she just knows me. I'll be the one that she, you know, you can tell she comes to me for a sense of calm and for a sense of, if she's having a, you know, a bit of a teary or just a crap day, I'm very much, we talk things through a lot more, and I just listen and I feel like I'm a better mum for it, definitely.
I love that. I just want to pick up on something you said when we first started chatting a short time ago, and you were talking about, in many ways, that the seed being planted about maybe trying life without alcohol. And you sort of asked yourself the question, would it set you free? Were you feeling trapped at that point?
Yeah, I wasn't enjoying the work, the job that I was doing, and I didn't feel like I was being recognised for what I was doing at the time. And if I look back now, what happened, that during that month, something happened in that role that made me realise I was being underappreciated and wasn't really being seen for my worth and the value that I was bringing. And that interestingly happened during those 21 days. And my normal reaction would be, I'd be pissed off. I'd get a glass of wine. I'd then put the world to rights. I'll say I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to leave. I'd been in the company for 9 years. I was going, you know, I'm going to leave. That's it. I'm done. And then I'd wake up the next day, and because I'd had a few couple of drinks, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's fine. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I'll just stay where I am. I've been here so long. I'm just going to grin and bear it. They will eventually reward me for where I am. And that had been a pattern. And actually, this time I was like, no, I'm not taking it anymore. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do that anymore. And so, for the first time in a long time, I was actually confident in myself and open to exploring opportunities outside of the company. And that was a big thing for me, actually. And through that, I then ended up realising that I wanted to coach. And that had been something I'd been more, you know, over the 20 years I'd been in the sort of corporate world, I'd always done coaching and mentoring along the way. But I never thought I could actually qualify to be a coach. I didn't feel like I was old enough or wise enough to be a coach, not really realising what a coach was. Obviously, I was seeing these executive coaches, and they were all in their sort of 50s and 60s. And so I thought, well, I'm not ready to be a coach yet. And again, I thought, well, if I'm not enjoying this and I've not got anything to go to, why don't I look at coaching and just think about, just do something in coaching? Because I had all this time on my hands as well. I mean, you would have found the same, but when you stop drinking, you suddenly have all this time.
Oh my God, it's terrifying. What do you do?
Yeah, exactly. And so I decided to sign up to do a transformational coaching qualification in the January, and made it work, because I had to do sort of 2 days a month or something doing this that was like intense, and then you coach and do bits outside of it. But I actually said, I'm going to take the holiday. I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to train to be a coach, not knowing where that was going. But at the same time, I then had people reach out to me saying, would you be interested in doing this role? I was headhunted for about 3 or 4 different roles. And it was being open and being in this sort of state of, I don't know what it was, but by removing alcohol, it sort of opened my eyes to possibilities and not just sitting where I was, because I'd been told I'm in the best place and I'm doing the right thing, and this, why, where else would you go? And actually all these things came, and so I sort of trained as a coach and also then got a new job as well. So it was it was a really interesting time. So in hindsight, yes, at the time I had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. And I love it. And I love the fact that you did this because you wanted to. Like, you know, we say you do not need of rock bottom. You absolutely don't. You know, I sometimes think about what would life look like for me now at the age of 50 if I'd have carried on drinking, you know, and I don't know. I absolutely don't know. But what I do know for a fact is I would not be doing half the things that I'm doing now. I absolutely wouldn't in a million years. Talking professionally, what I do for a living, that wouldn't have happened. Not a chance. And I think, excuse the turn of phrase, you do grow balls of steel when you remove alcohol, because you are doing something that a lot of society considers to be crazy. You know, why are you doing that? What a ridiculous thing to do to stop drinking. And it's not. It's amazing. And to hear, you know, how your life has changed because you removed alcohol, not because you had to, not because something absolutely terrible happened. You just wanted to do something different.
And I think that's what stopped me for, you know, I probably knew deep down for probably a couple of years that I didn't want to do this anymore. But as you say, you know, society says this is what you do. And it's frightening because you're stepping away, you're being uncommon, you're stepping away from the norm, you're doing something completely different to what you're what you've been told and an adult is and what an adult does. And you don't know the reaction you're going to get from people. And you still, you know, I remember at the beginning it was, especially when we got out of lockdown and we were really sort of mingling again and doing things. And I went to a couple of things and people who knew me were so sort of like, it felt like they felt sorry for me because I'd stopped drinking. Oh, what a shame you can't have this drink. They'll pour a drink and then they'll be like, oh, what a shame. And I was like, I'm fine.
It's a shame.
I'm fine. And then someone else sort of turned around to me and said, did something happen during COVID? Because this is what happened to my friend during COVID. I was like, what? You know, I just didn't want to anymore. And I think that's what stops a lot of people from doing this, because they're so fearful of other people. And if you're a people pleaser, if you're someone who feels that they need to hide who they, not hide who they are, but I think we are all wearing a mask. You're not completely authentic until you stop drinking. I'm sorry, it's true. It's something that an authenticity comes to. You get to the point where you don't care so much about what people think. And yeah, of course, you know, you're going to care sometimes, but on the whole, you are who you are and you know who you are. And that's, again, something that I think you don't really get to know, because you're masking various emotions and you're numbing out, and you're, you know, people use it as a crutch a lot of the time. They use it to help them relax, to help them to feel less stressed, to do this. And so sitting in your emotions, as hard as that is, it's something that then helps you to understand yourself better as well.
I totally agree. And that's what I've said throughout this episode. I totally agree. I agree with everything you're saying, but it is, it's because it's true. It really, really is. It was interesting what you said there about alcohol revealing exactly who you are. This is something that I've talked about a lot, and I found the entire process completely terrifying. You know, people have that saying, don't they? Oh, you said that when you're drunk. Well, that's the truth coming out. That's who you really are. No, actually, no, it's not. You want to know the truth and find out who you really are, stop drinking. And dear God, and I always say as well, Dupe, that it's, people say, oh, it's like a whole new you. It's not. It's there. It's always been in you. It's always been in you. Except, even, you know, if it's a glass of wine a night, if it's a bottle of wine a night, it's not about the amounts, is it? It's about how it makes you feel. If it makes you feel like shit and you're going to remove that, you will truly discover who you are beneath it.
And that's a really good point, because I also think people, and the person listening might be thinking, well, I'm not that bad. I don't drink very much. It obviously isn't affecting me. But then they'll wake up at 3 a.m, berating themselves because they've had that drink when they said they weren't going to have that drink on the Wednesday, even though they're moderating. And, you know, and the amount of thoughts, I think, people, you don't realise how much you think about drinking and how much drinking takes up your mental capacity until you stop. And that's where you get the time, and where the time comes back, because you actually realise that you especially if you're trying to moderate as well. And there's, listen, there's nothing wrong with editing. There's no judgment here at all. But when I think about moderating and saying I'm not going to, and that's what I thought I was going to do. I thought I'd take 21 days and then I would just be able to take it or leave it. And that's what I would do. And luckily I didn't end up doing that. I just stopped.
It's so much easier though. It did the noise. It's so much easier. Oh my God. What you just said there as well about the brain space it takes up. You don't realise this until you stop. And I look, oh my God, I look back. And I was obsessed with drinking, who I was drinking with, how much I was drinking, when I could drink, and then feeling like shit, and then recovering from that by drinking. It was utterly exhausting. And so I thought, right, okay, let's flip this. Let's put as much energy into not drinking and just see where that takes us. And over the influence, we're very, if people can and want to moderate, absolutely crack on. I tried that nugget for approximately 15 years. And so for me, it simply doesn't exist. And I know it doesn't exist for a lot of people as well. Remove that noise and that is the game changer, isn't it?
That is absolutely it. That's absolutely. And I have, you know, I have conversations, should we say, light debates about this with people, but that is absolutely my stance. It's such a waste of your time. You're wasting your time by saying you're going to moderate. And I just don't feel like you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Each to their own. Each to their own. Dupe, we have a lot of people that listen to Over the Influence who are still drinking, and we get that. And for some people, it takes a few run-ups at this. And, you know, that's putting it politely in a lot of cases. For some people, it's an absolute real bloody struggle. And one thing we once discussed on our premium podcast, this was a couple of months ago, was the fact that the seed can be planted a year ago, 2 years ago, 5, 10 years ago. You know, I know a lot of women my age that have been thinking about changing their relationship with alcohol for a very long time. And so there's people listening to this now that are still drinking that might be thinking, you know what, I'm get December out of the way and I'm going to start in January, you know. And if that's the case, flipping crack on, you know, just do it, just start, just absolutely start. What advice would you give at this point for somebody thinking about it that's not necessarily, you know, got a rock bottom, that's not got an absolutely terrible life, they're plodding along quite nicely? What would you say?
So first, there's never a good time to stop. There's always an excuse. So even if you said, I'm going to get through Christmas and get through New Year, in January you'll have some sort of party or you have some sort of get together or some meeting or event that you're going to then think, oh well, I can't do it now. And so I'd make a decision. I'd take a 21 day break. That's not actually that long. And look at it as an experiment. And the key thing that I think, or I'd like to think that, you know, through my messaging and my book and everything else, is that you're not giving up. And so removing the phrase, I'm giving up, it's not, you're not giving anything up. You're only gaining in so many ways. And so it's about noticing, and I'm a big fan of journaling, especially in the early days. So think about, you know, when you, even from day one, think about how did you feel that day? What good thing happened, or what happy thing, happy memory do you have of doing that on day one? What is it that you're proud of for that day? And then just keep writing it down, because ultimately all that's happened, if you've been drinking for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it's been, our subconscious has accumulated all these memories so that when it's a sunny day and the sun's shining and there's a beer garden over there, our subconscious says, oh, it's a sunny day. I've got so many memories of myself going and having a glass of wine or a gin and tonic in the sunshine, and that's what it knows to do. Our subconscious then says, it's Christmas, so I have to get all the different bits and pieces that I never do. I never drink Baileys in the year. Why am I drinking Baileys at Christmas? You know, again, it's a subconscious memory. So if you can then start to think about what are the good things that have happened over that break that you've taken, and then read them back, and then start thinking, this is actually positive, and I'm not depriving myself. I don't have to white knuckle it, because actually I'm enjoying the experiment and exploring, and then also noticing the react, you know, how other people are around you who are still drinking and what that looks like. Go out for a night out and get your alcohol-free drinks and just sit there and watch people. You'll be bored after about 2 hours because people will be repeating themselves the same over and over again, or they'll just be getting louder and louder and you'll just be like, oh, okay, I'm done. But just watch it and see and think about, what does that say to you, and what does that, how does that make you feel? So I would just say, you're not giving anything up. So get that vocabulary out of your mind and don't start whatever break, you know, if it's 10 days, 20 days, whatever you decide to do, just don't think about it as you're giving up. Think about it as you're exploring what life could be like without alcohol, and you're open to see what happens.
Love that. We talk a lot about that, running towards things rather than running away from, and yeah, not giving up everything that you gain. I mean, where to start with that? I mean, one of the things that we have touched on as well is the time. Oh, dear Lord. When I first stopped, I'm like, oh, crikey, I didn't realise Saturdays and Sundays lasted so long. And it's unusual at first, isn't it? It's really, really unusual. And we say a lot, you know, do something else. Do something different. Don't just sit there waiting for something to happen. Plug that gap.
And that's a really good point. And I think it's about rediscovering who you are and what your interests are. And one of the things that I'll ask clients, and they'll say, what do you like doing? And people just don't know. They don't remember what they like doing. And actually, it's sort of, in some cases, thinking back to as a teenager, as a child, what did you enjoy doing? And finding things, creating a little self-care list or an alcohol-free toolkit of things that you can do whenever that are easy, you know, just as simple as putting on some music and dancing around the kitchen, you know, and you can paint, I did a lot of painting by numbers. I started knitting. I just did lots of different things. I was just trying things. And these all sound like, you know, if I think back to me 3.5 years ago, the world was going, that's boring. You know, that's rubbish. But actually, it's not. It's lots of fun, you know. Find things that you actually like. Go for walks and just notice nature. Look at the clouds and look at the stars. And, you know, there's so many things you can do that are just everyday things, but I do think giving yourself that space and time to think about, what is it I like doing? Lots of people do cold water swimming. Lots of people try just things that they've never done before, and it gives them such joy. So why not just, and that's why I keep going back to it, it's an experiment. Don't sit there and try and do the same thing. Don't sit in front of the telly. Go and read a book. Go and read a magazine. Do something, you know, light a candle and try to breathe, but just do something that you wouldn't normally do and see what sticks. And it is really about what do you, you'll just rediscover yourself. And that's exciting as well, because in our 40s and 50s, you sort of sit there and think, I'm just boring. I'm just doing the same thing every single day. And you get into this rut, and that's just your life. When you stop drinking, you suddenly think, I can go and climb Scarfell. I can go and do Ben Nevis, and you never would have done it. You never would have thought, I'll just go and do that. And we stop ourselves doing so much because we're too old, or we think we're past it, or, well, I couldn't go and do that. Why would I go and do that when I'm going to go to the pub tomorrow? You know, we stop ourselves doing so much that I just think, go for it and try different things and rediscover who you are.
Absolutely love that. Absolutely. You've reminded me of a couple of episodes. We've had Claire Pooley, mega author, friend of OTI, of the Sober Diaries on the pod. And she talked about the fact that when she stopped, she started writing. Her love of writing, which she enjoyed doing as a youngster, you know, look where that took her. And we had an artist on the pod as well, although we didn't know he was an artist, a world-class artist, until he removed alcohol. He's called Paul Locke. His stuff is stunning, absolutely stunning. Liked doing it as a kid, didn't realise he was an artist. And what really makes me chuckle is the hobbies and interests that actually come to the surface when you stop drinking. I didn't know I liked amateur dramatics. Best thing I ever did. Best thing I ever flipping did, you know. Now, I'm realising we're getting pressed for time here. And what I want to do is just come to a couple of the questions. We've got some of our community members watching Dupay. Are you happy for me to ask a couple of questions
of
here? Lovely, lovely. OK, we'll come to the book and your coaching stuff. We'll give that a plug at the end. So thank you, Iris. I'll come back to that in a sec. Camilla says, how many attempts did you have before you stopped drinking for good?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think I consciously had a load of attempts. I think I tried to do dry January a few times, which failed miserably. So my dry January, probably in that year, I might have tried to do it. Yeah, January 2020, I probably tried dry January. Tongue twister.
Easy for us to say.
I tried dry January. And my dry January would consist of this. So I would be all go on the Monday. And then by the Thursday, I'd be thinking, well, dry January can technically be in the week only. So it means I can still drink on a Friday and Saturday night. And then invariably, I'd drink on the Friday and then the Saturday night. And then, of course, I'd have a roast dinner on Sunday. So who doesn't like a glass of red wine? So I would have had one on Sunday. So by the time Monday comes, it's like, yeah, dry January, what? No, not doing that. And so they were my, I did a similar thing. I'd stop for Lent. And so I probably did attempt, but it was half-hearted. So I would say, and this is another thing, this is why I like to think I don't preach about it. I don't sort of put any pressure on anybody, but my view is it's the best thing ever. But it really needs to happen in your own time. You need to be ready for it. Nobody can force you to stop drinking. Nobody can say to you, this is the time to do it. You can look at people around you. And I know it's all the rage at the moment. It feels like everyone is alcohol free or is banging on the sober drum at the moment because that seems to be cool and trendy. I want to also say this isn't a fad. This isn't a let me do this because it's trendy. This is a this will change your life. Full stop. And I think a lot of people are jumping on this band and I'll be interested to see how long people sort of stay on it, but hopefully long enough to realise it is a good thing and they want to change their life. But, you know, I think in terms of the number of attempts, I wasn't fully vested in stopping. And I don't even think I was fully vested in stopping when I stopped at the beginning. But I did know I'd been having this nudge and niggle, and I'd climbed Kilimanjaro in the March of 2020, so literally climbed a mountain, came down, and the world changed because a week later we were in lockdown. And so I managed to do it just before it all went cray cray. And so I did this massive thing, and I remember thinking, if I can do this, I can do anything. And I was obviously still drinking at the time. And ironically, I did 6 days on a mountain. And then the first thing I wanted to do when I got back to the hotel was celebrate with a glass of fizz, which is exactly what I did. And obviously didn't have any alcohol for 6 days. But I did get a sense that there was more to life and that I wanted to do more when I did that in the March. It took me till November to realise what that more was, which was actually maybe just drinking might help you discover what that is. And I kept getting those nudges that obviously we went into lockdown, mummy wine culture, mummy memes. Everyone was like, you've got to have a drink to get through the day, blah, blah, blah. That was the rhetoric that was going on at the time. Obviously, it was also an essential for the government that we all could still access. So yeah, it wasn't really on my radar. But I would say anyone who is thinking about it, there's no right or wrong and there's no failure, and you can attempt as many times as you can, and it will happen for you when it happens for you, and you'll know, and you'll make the right decision at the right time.
Dupay, thank you. We've got about 2 minutes left and I've got two questions left to ask you. So how would you sum up the last 3 years in a sentence?
I would say it's been unexpected, but bloody amazing.
It's so true. It's so true. And before you go, Dupe, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat. I know Iris, who's also on this call, wants to know the name of your book. Give that a good plug. And if anybody else wants to find out about your coaching and find you on socials, where can they do that?
Thank you. So it's this. It's A Cocktail of Clarity. It's how to ditch drinking, embody a joyful new identity and thrive alcohol free. And you can get it in paperback or Kindle on Amazon. And yeah, I'm hoping it, you know, for me again, would I say I would have written a book 3 years ago? No. So again, didn't know that was in me. Apparently it is. Hoping it will help as many people. And I wanted to go from the, I read a load of Quitlet and I think it was the most amazing thing. But I wanted to give a view of, you don't have to wait until you hit rock bottom, and it is a choice. And I wanted it to be a very positive book on being alcohol free. There's loads of lots of tips and tricks. There are questions to ask along the way. There are actions to do, as well as weaving in stories. And hopefully, it will help inspire you.
Amazing. And social media?
Yes, I'm at Thrive Alcohol Free, and my website is thrivealcoholfree.com. So you can find it. And I also have a podcast called Thrive Alcohol Free. So it's all linked, Thrive Alcohol Free. It's all about being alcohol free and thriving. So, yes.
Amazing. It does what it says on the tin. Dupe Witherick, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you. It's been a delight to speak to you and to finally meet you as well. So thank you so much for having me on.